Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money, major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never change anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So If you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right, today's podcast, What's Your Family Business? What's Your Family Business? 619-768-2945 live stream calling number. All right, yesterday we had a very good guest, and yesterday's podcast was titled, Chinese Restaurant Cash Flow versus 9-to-5 Paychecks. And we really didn't get into that topic. We're going to get in that today. But the guest yesterday did, you know, we were there for 2 hours. So she really gave some good information about helping the homeless. But we're going to take a look at not all the ways that people become homeless, but one significant way is that a lot of people who have a 9-to-5 and end up homeless or struggling, take your pick, is because I don't think they realize the distinction of what I call the Chinese restaurant cash flow system versus the 9-to-5 paycheck system. Just quickly mentioned yesterday at the end of the podcast, the traditional 9-to-5 system, at least here in the United States, here are the intervals. Typically, you got about four distinctions. One, you get 30 days a month. You get paid once every 2 weeks on the 1st and the 15th. Okay, 2 paychecks a month. Now, you're spending money every day of the month, but you get paid twice a month, the 1st and the 15th. The second distinction would be some people get paid every week. You know, every Friday, they get a paycheck. All right. Third distinction is monthly. Some people here in the United States, or maybe some university professors or whatever, they get paid once a month. So on the 1st of the month, they get a check, and they got to budget it out because that's all they're going to get for that month, all right? And then the last distinction would be daily pay. Now, cab drivers, beauticians, barbers, many self-employed, not all self-employed, or day laborers. Day laborers, you know, get paid cash daily. Okay. But the majority of people, well, a lot of people, the ones that most people strive to get is the 9-to-5 paycheck. Now, so I took, and that's the 9-to-5 paycheck system. Now, I took the, and it doesn't have to be a Chinese restaurant. It can be any kind of restaurant or what have you, or business, but in this case, just for simplification, because most people have had Chinese food, I took a Chinese restaurant menu, and many of you probably have one laying around the house, and on the one that I have in my hands right now has over 211 items. Okay. Now, each one of those items, from crispy noodles to, matter of fact, let me open it up. Okay. From egg rolls. Now, egg rolls on this menu cost $1.75. Okay. Chicken teriyaki or beef teriyaki costs $5.95. All right. If you're a fan of chow mein, chicken chow mein, if you get it by the quart, it's $5.50 or $8.25. And you know what? Let me make a distinction right now. This menu actually has over, let me get my bearings straight here, over 300 items on here, because I didn't count when I was first going through this, because they sell some things by the pint and some items by the quart. All right. So they have over 300 items on here. Now, let's go back to and they got it broken down by, you know, categories, you know, appetizers. They have 12 appetizers. All right, now, let's start with the egg roll. The egg roll represents a paycheck. To them, it's a paycheck. But they don't solely rely on selling egg rolls. And the typical restaurant probably has, well, according to the statistics, it's about 330 people. I'm going to just bump that down to 200 customers a day. So they could say, you know what, well, we make egg rolls. This is the only item we're going to bet on so we can sustain ourselves. And you notice most Chinese restaurants, particularly carryout, they're family-based businesses. Okay. So, but they increased us. So under the appetizers category, they've got 12 paychecks. Egg rolls, that's $1.75. String rolls, $4.25. Fried wonton, $4.25. Crab rangoon, $5.45. A poo-poo platter, that's the most expensive item in the appetizers category. That's $11.75. And I believe that is the most expensive item on this menu. Oh, excuse me, it is not. The most expensive item on here, which is in another category, which is called the Chef Special, is Seafood Delight. That's $15.95. So they've got items from cans of sodas that might cost $1 to the egg rolls $1.75. Anyway, they got appetizers, soups, fried rice, lo mein, chow mein or chop suey, egg foo young, mushu, mi fun, sweet and sour dishes, vegetables, pork, beef, chicken dishes, prepared Chinese style. The chef's special category, the seafood category, the side order category, and the least expensive thing here is crispy noodles at $0.75. So they go anywhere from $0.75 to $15.95. They have combination platters. They got 32 of them alone. Okay, they have vegetable platters, vegetable specials, and they have 32 lunch specials. The lunch specials are $6.95. So they've got over 300 ways to make money in this menu. This is a family. This is one family. Sometimes if they have little kids or grandkids running around, you'll see the kids running around doing what they do. But once again, most Chinese restaurants are family-based businesses. So their system, and not all Chinese people do this, I'm just using this as an example. They've got over 300 ways to earn money. And they earn typically, on average, not everyone, but on average, and let's say the average one that might be in the hood, whatever you define the hood as, makes over $100,000 a month. That's over $1.2 million a year. Once again, some do that, some don't. That's just an average, all right? But I'm saying all this to say this, okay? Most people that might end up homeless or struggling, okay, they're betting on that 9-to-5 paycheck system, all right? Now, let's use a married couple as an example, all right? So the husband, now, you know what? There was a time where the husband here in the United States, I'm using the United States examples, could bring in one paycheck and the whole family would be sustainable. I'm going back to 1938 on this one. Dagwood Bumstead married the Blondie Bumstead, okay? He earned enough. Now, of course, houses back then, you can buy a nice house in a nice neighborhood with a white picket fence for $5,000 in 1938. So Dagwood made enough where he, well, Blondie didn't have to work. She can be a housewife. Okay. Let's bring the timeline up to the 50s, early 60s. Ricky Ricardo. One paycheck that sustained him and Lucy and later on Little Ricky. All right. And then, of course, they were struggling at times because Lucy was always on those wild schemes trying to make some money. And then Ricky would scold her from time to time because she was spending too much money. All right. Fred Flintstone, him and Barney Rubble, I know cartoon characters, but they were the breadwinners. Wilma and Betty didn't work. All right. Even the Brady Bunch, we're talking about late 60s, early 70s, Mike Brady, you know, marries Carol Brady. You know, they got the stepkids, the blended family thing going. And he was an architect. He bought in enough of a paycheck to sustain them in a, you know, that house that they had, and had enough money to hire Alice, the housekeeper, with, you know, with the household and whatnot. All right. Now, those are all TV shows. All right. Let's bump it up, I don't know, what, 80s or 90s. Roseanne, you know, the TV show Roseanne, when it had Roseanne. The Conners, I don't know if they were struggling, but they weren't on Easy Street. Okay. Both Dan and Roseanne had to work. Later on, Roseanne opened up her own loose meat shop business, whatever. But they needed two paychecks. All right. Some people, you know, using the husband and wife model or the roommate model or whatever, they will, you know, the husband's got a job, so the wife, to sustain a lifestyle that they'll both be happy with, the wife will get a job, and for some people that model works out beautifully. However, due to inflation, people's individual lifestyle tastes, and, you know, that's a whole other show. Some people might make 80, 90, 100,000 or more. They're struggling. So the husband might go out and have two jobs, and the wife might have just one. Some might make it that way. Both people in the relationship have two jobs. Four paychecks to be spent over 30 days, and they're still struggling. So that's why I'm doing this thing today. Does your family, what's your family business? Okay. Now, some of the greatest opportunities that a person, one of my businesses is I'm a landlord, all right? I got a couple of houses in New Orleans. They just went through this storm down there. It didn't hit New Orleans directly, but anyway, I'm glad the houses are still standing. You know, some repairs have to be made. Now, at first it was stressed me out, but I had to get on Faith Street. So brainstorming with people like Robin and others, I started looking at, okay, and one problem that I had, which I looked at it as a problem, then I reframed it into an opportunity. Now, the business, the family business, because this house is part of the ancestral homes that my family had on my mother's side. You know, it's just been a rental, okay? And really, the way things happen, I got legal control of the house. So I'm looking at, all right, got a problem with a refrigerator here that's basically almost kaput, and the people that are in there, they need a new one. So one of the things I learned some time ago through the power of reframing is, okay, what's the opportunity here? All right, so I came up with, not only me myself, but with the help of others just brainstorming, I've come up with like, well, let me count them here. We're up to 36 items in the product line that I didn't have yesterday. One of them will be dealing with refrigerators, okay? So we'll be selling refrigerators. And then in this particular case, because they're getting a new one coming in, but we reset the policy on the size and the type of refrigerators that go into the rental units, all right, which will not be American size anymore. We're reducing that for new people coming in. And then for the refrigerator that will be put into the basement today, and I started this yesterday, but I'm looking for somebody that will come in and know how to just repair this, because all this refrigerator needs, from what I've been told and the pictures I've seen, all it really, because it still cools and freezes, it just needs a seal. So I need to find somebody, well, I already got somebody that will clean it up. And then I need to find somebody who's good at fixing appliances and then put a new seal on here so the door stays shut. And when it's all spick and span and spiffy, because in New Orleans, there's a lot of businesses that will probably be shut down for the next 2 or 3 weeks. And then some places, like we had some people go to Home Depot last night, and they were out of stock with a lot of their refrigerators. So I don't know who's going to do it yet. That's why I played that Faith Street thing. I don't know who's going to do it. But we're going to find, because I'm in Florida, but I got enough people on the ground, boots on the ground, where we're going to find somebody that will fix this refrigerator up. And now I'm adding that on to my landlord hat. With that just one refrigerator, I want to see how this goes, all right, so I can recover some money. Because I already know there's a market out there. Once it's cleaned up, it's going on, the thing called? Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist or both of them. And I'm not going to jack the price up and try to gouge people, because that's not cool, all right? But through this crisis in New Orleans, or Louisiana, really, I'm looking at opportunities. So things that I toilet paper, wipes, selling people off-the-grid kitchens, solar generators. I got a list of 36 of them. So the first item that I'll be working on, once again, I looked at it as a problem, and then that's how I looked at it at first, and then I had to reframe it as an opportunity. This is an opportunity for me to get into the used appliance business. Also, due to brainstorming of people like Rob and other friends I know, that now I'm looking at, now I'm looking toward, what is storm season, in this part of the country? Buffalo, New York, Rochester, all those places, they have heavy snows and they have lights. And then it even gets to, you know, people who just got their lights cut. So we're going to make up basic items. And this all goes under the title today, Fabulous. Now, I'm using examples tied into what I do. The idea that I want to transmit out there today is within your own household, like the guest we had on yesterday, all right, you know, her daughter passed away, and she and her husband reframed that to helping other people the way they do. So whatever it might be in your family, because you know what, just don't stop at one item, but you know, sit down and look at the possible opportunities. And here's how it is: every problem, or you know what, it's really a matter of perception. You know the whole thing of is the glass half empty or half full? Okay, every problem. Well, to some people, that item might be perceived as a problem. And they might get in victim mode or give up and don't even try to figure out how to solve it. For other people, same situation, they see it as an opportunity. That's what I had to do with this refrigerator. Because I had to take the phone call. I said, damn, I got another problem. And whatnot. But when I reframed it, okay, this is an opportunity. Because the worst thing I could possibly do is say, you know what, get rid of the refrigerator. That's like throwing away money. So it's this storm, Ida, that passed through New Orleans has brought many of blessings for me. Because I now look at those problems as opportunities that can be monetized. I wrote down 36 items so far, but I'm just starting off small with one. Getting somebody that we're on the same page, fix this refrigerator, I mean, you know, get a new seal on there, because it already cools sufficiently, and it freezes, but it's difficult to keep the door closed. So I just need somebody to fix that up. I already got somebody to clean it up. And then once that's cleaned up, then we'll put it on, you know, something like Facebook or OfferUp or what do you call that, Craigslist or what have you, and recover the money and hopefully make a small profit. So any problems that you might have in your family or any problems that you might occur outside of your family, just reframe that and you can turn those perceived problems into I'm up here chatting with somebody. You know, whatever. Anyway, so what's your family business? If you don't, and I think every family, because now your kids or grandkids, they might want to become rocket scientists or whatever. But with the family business that has multiple streams of income, it doesn't have to be like, say, the menu I'm looking at has got over 300 paychecks. And you know what? Basically, let's look at this. With the Chinese food menu, they got some basic fundamentals thing. Because this is all, hopefully some people will get a paradigm shift off this. Okay. Let's take a homeless person. Okay, that might be professionally were a cook, but right now, due to life circumstance, whatever, they're homeless. Okay, now let's take the Chinese family that has the Chinese restaurant, and they got over 300 items, 300 paychecks on their menu. Fundamentally, now let's look at the fundamentals of how to even multiply to over 300 items paychecks. Because there's a common denominator here. On a Chinese menu, the basis of how they multiply these is fundamentally chicken, beef, pork, seafood, and vegetables, and throw in the grains, you know, like rice. Just six things. That's it. But they make several dishes from that. So the person that might be an unemployed chef or a homeless cook, okay, all it's just a paradigm shift. And I'm simplifying things because the reason why people become homeless or whatever, it's different from person to person. But I'm just saying, maybe that person that was a chef, they relied on paycheck once every 2 weeks. Or the person that might work at McDonald's, and McDonald's has got, I don't know, McDonald's has got, what, at least 15, 20 items on the menu. I mean, you got the hamburger, you got the cheeseburger, you got the Big Mac, you got the quarter pounder, you got the quarter pounder with cheese, you got the chicken sandwich, you probably have more than one different type of chicken sandwich, that's 7 items. Then you got the salads, you got at least 2 or 3 different salads, and you got the milkshakes, chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry. You got Coke, Pepsi, whatever else in there. So they've got maybe 15, 20 items on there. You know, Happy Meal, the dollar menu. So so I'm just saying the person who, one of the reasons why the person might be homeless and unemployed is because a lot of people traditionally go out and they try to get one job that pays twice a month, and hopefully that job paying twice a month will give you enough money to live off of. Some people are big on the minimum wage. You know, they think, well, $15 an hour, I'll be able to live sustainably. Or here's my theory on the minimum wage. I believe if the minimum wage was $1,000 an hour, you would still have people that are broke and homeless. Because a lot of those people don't know how to manage. Once again, with the Chinese food menu, the least expensive item on this menu is 75 cents. But they're not relying on that one item. They've got over 300 paychecks. So when you look at a menu from McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, a Chinese food restaurant, an Indian restaurant, KFC, Wendy's, or a dollar store, you know, how many items are in the dollar store? At each one of those items in the dollar store, they're inexpensive, they're cheap, and not everybody's going to come in and buy everything, and that's all right. But when you've got to, you know, take your family business and do it that way. In any event, 678, what's your family business? Like I say, I've added on recycling refrigerators. I've added that on, that's 24 hours ago. I did not have that in my business repertoire. It's in there now. I already got the inventory. I already got somebody to clean it up. Okay, now I've got to find somebody to fix it. So I'll keep you posted on that whole thing of how that goes. Anyway, I think it's an interesting, you know, little, if you got some time to kill, just look at a menu, and then you sit down and then you look at your life or your business, and then how many items can you turn into money? All right, Robin, if you got any feedback, you know, press 1. Let me know. I see your light. I mean, I don't see your light, but I see you there. And wait a minute. Oh, let me get organized here, people. You know how my board gets with this blog talk. You know what? Also, I'll say that for later. 614, your mic is open.
Hi, Hello, good morning, sir. This is Peggy. Nice to
Good morning, Peggy.
Be here
How are
today.
You?
I am phenomenal. How's everyone?
I can't complain. It's another sunny day, you know.
Oh, right.
Full of opportunity.
That's a great message you're putting out today.
Well, like I mentioned briefly, I mean, you, as you shared yesterday, and you can share it again today because we got some new people here. Your daughter passed away, and how did you turn that? Well, I don't even know how to frame it. How did you turn that grief into opportunity to help others?
The grief was just so much to unbear, you know, unbearable almost every day. Just getting up angry, mad, upset, mad at the world, mad at everything. And it's like, this is not living. This is not life. This is not what we're supposed to be here, to be mad. And we are put here, I think, to give back. So that's why I started Autumn's Way Through Helping Others, is to give back to the community. We're just losing so many people at an alarming rate. So it's like some people just need an ID or a birth certificate, you know, to get into, have services for clinicals or for anything. They have to have an ID to get a job, for anything. So that's why I really started working in the community. It took me 3 years after Autumn had passed away to actually want to live or breathe again, you know. But it's like death is not the end. It's really not. And I just want to put that out there so that people know that. We are energy. We will forever be here. We can do anything, even after death. Our energy never stops. And
yeah, you know, I agree with you that one of the things I think we all learned in, what, third or fourth grade about energy, you can't destroy energy. Now, it can change. Energy can change form. Using a simple example, you take water. It can transmute into a solid, a liquid, or a gas. So it's
exactly.
Still there.
And water
you
can
can't destroy
be used as a...
So in the case of your daughter, I've never physically met her, but through your works, which is energy, she exists, just in a different form.
Yes, yes. And there's so many, like I said, you know, down here that are struggling every day with just a place to live. So, you know, we can't stop. We have tin jackets. We're not going to wear tin jackets at one time. Give that one of those jackets to somebody that can wear it. You know, we have 15 pairs of shoes. Who wears 15 pairs of shoes? It's great, you know, but there's people out here that have no shoes. There's people out here that have no feet, but they have shoes. You know, if that makes sense. So they're giving their shoes away so that someone else can walk and be comfortable. So that's what we do at Autumn's Way. Anything that we can do to make someone's life a little better, we're going to do that. If they need a place to stay for the night, something to eat, we've got all kinds of food in our cabinet. We're not going to eat that in one day. People stock and stock stuff up, and we'll take some of that food out because your neighbors are hungry. You know, we can get more food, but they can't get more food. But can we just share the meal that we're going to eat today? You see people at the abandoned houses. They have nothing. Can we give them that food? There's a lot of our restaurants, which are awesome, that are giving the food that they take off the buffets. We have some programs here in Columbus that are going to the restaurant. They can only keep the food on the buffet, you know, for a certain amount of time. So they're taking picking that food up, and they're taking it out to the shelters for people to have a hot lunch or, you know, that type of stuff to help feed people that are hungry that can't get out in homeless camps. And so, you know, that's exciting. That's, you know, we're doing that. And just continue to give back, you know, every day. It doesn't take $1 million. You don't need $5,000, $100. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. you just need a hug, or someone just needs just to know that they care. They have someone there that's in their corner that will help them get to their objectives, where they're going in life.
Right. Let me ask you this now. If you can remember back to day one that you and your husband decided to go out and help, start helping others, if you can remember that, like that first day or first week or the first few people you mm-hmm. encountered, what was that experience like?
Breathtaking. I will never forget it. The first day I made the street bags and I decided, okay, we have to do something. I made the street bag, the peanut butter and jelly sandwich, on a couple loaves of bread, jelly, couple cases of water, put some Narcan.
Okay. And now you guys went, you made it, so after you...
They don't have a way to clean up.
Okay.
So when we went out there, it was like people were so... appreciative of just receiving a bottle of water. Just to see someone smile, just to have a bottle of water, you know, that's a feeling I'll never forget, is just
mm-hmm.
Just a simple bottle of water just made their whole day, you know, and it's like, I can't stop. If a bottle of water is going to help them that much, what else can we do? What do you need? And that feeling of just, you know, I don't need no payment. I don't want payment. I don't want anything back. It's just to see that person smile, it just uplifted me that that's all they needed was a bottle of water, something to drink. They were so thirsty. But they just wanted to talk. They just said, you know, we've been so long, and just the sat with them for a while and learn about them and their life and their struggles and where they came from and where they want to go, just to be involved in their life. It was just uplifting to be a part of they. I didn't know that I was needed there. I just did not know what a great need there is in our community. Just to have when someone go and just say hello, just drive through, hey, how are you doing today? Is there anything you need? Can we get you a sandwich? You need a shirt? You don't have any shoes? Let's buy you a pair of flip-flops. What do you need? You're going to get some tennis shoes, something. You know, but like you said, we have so many jobs that we don't realize that we can employ so many different people, thousands and millions of people every day just by giving back. We can employ them because it enables them to be successful within their own self.
Right.
You know, and when you can give a person self-esteem back and you can make them believe in their self, if they believe in their self, there's nothing that they can't do or achieve. And when we have so many people that don't believe in their self, then nothing is done. Nothing will be done. But when we can give them a glimmer of hope, there's nothing they can't accomplish. We have a team of people, and your song yesterday with Nine Friends was truly amazing. Because with Nine Friends, we can build a whole house. We can
right.
build anything we need for a strong community. And we have so many communities out here. Our babies are struggling. Our children are dying from gun violence, drugs, parents are gone, absent, dead, in jail. And if we can enlighten those babies and their heart, and we can let them understand they are important. Everything they do is important. And we cherish them. We cherish, well, we we need to cherish our youth more than what we are doing. Because I see a lot of our young babies we're losing at an alarming rate. And if we can just give them a little bit of hope, a little bit of confidence, they can go build a house. We can get them a drill and a hammer and some nails. And if we just come together a little bit more and give them a little bit of energy to let our youth know they're not alone, just because, you know, a lot of them don't have their parents. They don't have no one. So if we can uplift them just a little bit, give them a job, teach them how to be successful, there's nothing they can't do. You know, they can be the next mm-hmm. doctor, lawyer, rocket scientist, veterinarian, own any business, any restaurant, and it's going to be successful, you know. But just we have to give back to our community and our young people. Older people, they need uplifted. Or, you know, our older people are going through a lot because they're on a certain income, like you were talking about.
Right.
They're only getting paid once a month. So with that once a month, you know, they're only getting $1,000 a month. That's it. Okay, that's to pay rent, electric, gas, water. Okay, but what
about
that's
a whole lot
their
to take out of one paycheck.
Yes, sir. And then, you know, they have medicine. Sometimes their insurance are not covering their medicine, so they have mm-hmm. to pay that extra. Okay, what about the toilet paper, dishwashing liquid? Okay, shampoo, soap. But then about the food, they have to eat. Some of these senior citizens are only getting $16 to $19 a month in food stamps. When they pay all their bills, they might have $200 left. That's just stretched to buy food, toilet paper, paper products, you know, and that type of stuff. There is still such a big need for them that, you know, they can't go and work a 30 or 40-hour job. And so the food pantries come in, and they're so important. But what if they can't get to the food pantry? You know, they don't have a car or they don't have a license or – so then that's where the youth in our community, we need some of those more people to step up and step in. But if they're locked up and they're not doing what they should be doing, how are we going to help our community when they're not present? So that's, I remember just a lot from that first day. And I went out a lot on talking about things, but that first day just I just wanted to do more because I've seen that there was such a great need to do more. So when I passed out the water and the sandwiches, it was like, this is not enough. And I just felt so good. It was like, I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop because I've seen they needed more. And the struggles out here is so real. These people are, they have nowhere to go. They have no job. Some of them don't have the means to get to where they need to go for the job interview. So we mm-hmm. try to get them a bus pass, anything we can do to get them
now,
somewhere.
Let me ask you this. Some of these people, because the homeless population is very diversified, I'm sure you've run into your share of people with substance, you know, some type of substance abuse or mental illness, and I guess it's a case-by-case basis, but how do you handle those people, or do you refer them to other people that might have more expertise in dealing with them?
Yes, sir. We always refer, yes, sir, because I'm not a professional, but we have professional people on my team. We can call 24/7, 7 days a week. And when we meet each person, you know, we look at them. We look at their body language because, you know, like you said, you know, mental issues, drug issues. And some people with mental issues, they're scared of people that's coming to help them. They're scared that they're going to take maybe their book bag away or what they have. And so when we look at them and talk with them, we introduce who we are and we try to see if they're on drugs or if they're schizophrenia. We have nurses and doctors that we can call to come out to the homeless camp, if you will. And if they're drug-related, we do have people that can come out. But if they don't want to go, you know, we have people that run down the street. They will call the ambulance. They will call, you know, like NetCare if someone is struggling with mental episodes. And if they're a harm to themselves or to others, we are really networking with those people because, you know, we don't want them to hurt themselves. We don't want them to hurt someone else, but we don't want them to hurt themselves. So when you see that they
Hello? Hello? All right, hold on. Peggy, I can't hear you. Maybe you accidentally muted yourself. Ah, okay, her call dropped. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break here, wait for her to call back. We'll be back.
Feel the rhythm flow, feel
Issues on here. Some target. The system been booting people out. Robin, you available? Press 1 if you are. In any event, today's live stream, we're talking about what's your family business, and I wanted to, before we make the next call, because we're trying to cue some stuff up. I can't even talk. So we can get back a flow on this. We had Peggy was on. Peggy Osborne, but I think the system booted her out twice. All right, Robin's phone's in the studio. Oh, here we go. Okay, Robin, you there?
Yeah, she didn't get booted off. She was on her way to Columbus. So they went through a dead zone.
Okay.
She'll call back in.
Okay, good. All right, let's see. Well, I mean, what? All right, wait a minute. I'm trying to line things. All right. One of the clips. And I haven't had time to line it up, and I don't want to put something unrelated on. All right, when it comes to dealing with the homeless, like, for instance, now, I don't think that's my lane unless it's the working homeless. But when I think of home, and they're all different type of homeless. But when I think of homeless, I mean, the risk factor is one person that I think about that, you got to have your skill set together because I'm not a social worker.
Uh-huh.
Is the are you familiar with the person Eileen Wuornos?
Yes.
That person.
Yes.
Eileen was homeless. Yeah, she was homeless. The late Eileen Wuornos. She was homeless. Man, she lived.
She lived in the woods.
It was a point in her life where she lived in the woods.
I'm thinking
I got a property that's, you know, wooded, you know, 4 acres wooded. And I'm thinking, like, when it gets dusk, it is pitch black.
Let me tell you what I did. You
don't know what's going to run up on you.
I went to the woods, too. But I went to the city park, Meadowvale Park, downtown Sacramento, okay? And so I would go in that park, and I would find a tree somewhere along the edge, and I would sit down at the base of that tree, and I would not move. I would be still, because if I would move,
you were in the city though, right?
In the city, but I went to
the woods and on the edge of the park. Okay.
And on the edge of the park. Because if I moved, it would make them notice me and see me. They're out there alert for victims and stuff like that. So,
you don't know who's out there lurking.
I went to the woods, and I put my back against the tree, and I sat still, and then I just watched and observed everything going on around me, and then I strategically timed my movements in and out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, but
you gotta be you resort to
nature. They used to have that. You remember the 4-H club? Do you remember that?
Yeah,
LA?
I remember that. Yeah, hey, I remember
the
4-H that
club.
Yeah.
Lincoln Logs, scouting, all of these things used to teach us these fundamentals: how to survive, how to live, how to build. All of that, you can't get it anywhere. You can't even hardly go toys and crafts store. You can't even hardly find a craft store anymore. Remember, we used to go and buy the models, and you could the kits
yeah,
and you could
yeah,
put together.
Yeah, I used to do that
okay.
when I was younger. Yeah.
Yep. All that's gone away. But that's what we do. We tend to go back to what? Nature.
Right. Well, hold on. Before we get well, now.
Sorry.
I brought up Eileen Wuornos.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of, now they might not be killing people, but there's a lot of Eileen Wuornos's out there among the homeless population. So how can a person who had, and you don't know what might trigger that person. Because she ended up killing 7 people, at least that we know about. So, I mean, Charles Manson was homeless. And then a lot of people who joined his family were homeless. So.
Yeah, they were professional house jackers and squatters, L.A.
Right, so my question is, you know.
I think it's a special skill set,
and I don't have the skill set, is, you know, you're helping people. Like, you know, give a person a bottle of water, that's great. Give them some sandwiches, that's great. But then, you know, in a house-building activity or any kind of communal activity, that takes it to a whole different realm because now they're getting into your personal space.
Yeah, it takes a certain commitment, a level of passion, you know.
And I imagine you got to learn how to watch your
and
back.
And it would have to. I would dare say even a calling.
Well, I know that's not my calling.
Because taking people in, it's one thing. It is one thing to help them. It's a whole another way to go out of your way to open your home, to go and get them, to do extra stuff, to make sure that they're okay. You get up out of your bed and jump in your car, roll right on, you know?
Right.
Let me give this girl, I'm sending her the link so she can listen.
Okay.
At least click and listen in if she can't call back in.
But yeah, so
whatever I was saying.
Like I said, they're I mean, I'm looking at what I know about Eileen Wuornos's life. I mean, she just had, just a rough way to go from birth.
Yeah.
And she was turned into a monster.
She was definitely.
Saying that to say this. There's a lot of so-called monsters. Now, you can classify them as monsters, but then certain people, like you say, that whoever calling, they don't see them that way because maybe if somebody had caught Eileen before she went too far. Because I think she basically became, she was victimized so much that she, I don't know her, but.
She made a choice because guess what? She's not the only person that's had devastating things to, like, I was been held prisoner in my home. I've been beaten, brutalized, raped, but I didn't choose or make a decision to go out and revenge and kill anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from a person with mental illness, post-traumatic stress disorder, and bipolar, and I get triggered. But I haven't been triggered to kill. I'm just saying. So
well, that's you. Okay. Because I'm saying you got to know how
But somebody, they still make that decision. They make that decision. To even if they are triggered or whatever, they still make that decision. So, I get and I can accept that she went through some horrendous things and that's what's responsible for skewing her. I get that. Because
right. So my question is, all right, let's say you got a homeless, a program. Let's say you got some kind of program to help the homeless. Okay.
Yeah.
And within that, because like I say, it's a special skill set. They're a different type of homeless. So it's like if a person, like for me, I really don't have patience with substance abusers.
Yeah, me neither.
Cause
me neither.
I had a family member that when I was young, it just really turned me off. So I got so almost zero tolerance for that. However, that's not my lane. All right, running up on somebody like say Eileen Wuornos, she was out in the woods, So like you said, if you don't have the calling to deal with certain people, then 'cause I know one night I was in D.C., and I was walking up the street, and I saw some homeless people, sleeping on the sidewalk and whatnot, not too far from the Washington Monument. So I figured, they're homeless, and they're not going to bother nobody. But then I was walking confidently up the street. Then one of them got up, and he said something, and just his vibe was, you know what, let me turn around. I don't feel like taking any chances tonight. Because I didn't know what he might do.
Mm-hmm.
And I would only have myself to blame if something went wrong because I walked into it willingly. So I just turned around.
It could be your life.
Right.
Just like that. It could be your life. And most murders happen just like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you know,
right.
I'm saying they take a chance, blah blah blah. But when you don't know what someone might do, I wouldn't be inclined. I wouldn't be
right.
So moved.
Because
you
I've
know?
Done some stuff like you know, a landlord thing. This is when I was just starting out, though.
Yeah.
Somebody said something to me, and I, you know, one of her, it wasn't even the person that was leasing the place. It was one of her men.
Mm-hmm.
So I got up, got my car, drove over that part of town. He was gone by the time I got there, but thinking back about it, now this is what
yep.
they were doing. This is before people were doing, well, now people doing crazy stuff then, too. But, for instance, I knew a guy I went to college with. He got killed because, you know, they came out of the club and somebody said or did something that he didn't like. So
yep.
he went and confronted the dude and got shot. So,
yeah.
And I've been in a couple of situations where I've been cussed out. One of the times I was cussed out in front of the whole block. But in those situations, typically, I don't say anything. I let them vent. I don't have a comeback. I just let them vent.
Yep.
And then I leave.
And then just remove myself from the situation.
Exactly.
Bye-bye.
Right.
See you when you feel better. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, like, say, you got to have a skill set, in my opinion.
I think you have to have a calling. It has to be a calling.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, because I'm looking at, I would classify that person, I give an example. My mother used to take care of foster children. So, and they were little kids that she was dealing with, you know, 4, 5, 6, that age. But one of the social workers called her up one day and asked her, would she be interested in taking in a 17-year-old for more money? So when my mother told me, I was in another town at the time, I said, but I'm glad I was scheduled to visit her. Because I had taught in the public school system. So I know teenagers that come from troubled families and backgrounds. They can be very toxic and physically harm you. And there's virtually nothing that you can do. So I told her, I said, look, a 17-year-old in the foster care system, more than likely, too much I looked at that person as damaged. Okay, long story short, I'm glad I went to visit her, because when I stepped in the house that night, my mother was on the phone, calling the police, and a 17-year-old female was, anyway, long story short, the sheriff's department came and took her out, removed her out of the house, the 17-year-old young lady from foster care. Now, I mentioned that on a podcast some years ago because I said the young lady was damaged. But then another caller said she wasn't damaged. So I'm just looking at it. People look at it differently. She was, the other caller was looking at her, here's a person that needed help. Okay, you look at it that way. Then that person's in that lane. I'm looking at some people you just can't help or you don't have the skill set. To help.
Have the skill set, see, because they take those people and they orient them, right? They give them orientation and make them go through these background checks, but they don't prepare them for the real situation. And
mm-hmm.
and they can't cope with it, nor should they. It's just like the families can't. What would a family do with a troubled child? They would go and get professional help, right? But what those kids, those damaged kids do, is they get in the system, and then the system doesn't divulge their issues because they're trying to them. And
right.
Then the children are also being abused and trafficked by these people that are getting paid to take care of them. So these kids are angry, and they're lashing out, and they're striking out, and they're striking out first because they know here's another home, here's another somebody's going to be mad about. Some people take in the foster kids, and they take the money, and then they let them eat TV dinners and top ramen while the rest of the family eats the home-cooked meal and stuff like that, if they feed them at all. So these kids, they're damaged. That girl, I don't know what her situation was, but for whatever it was, that was a desperate, with your mom, that was her way of trying to get control over herself and her life from a system that allowed her to become like that. And that's what happened to that 17-year-old. Yep.
Well. Yep.
And your mom is not equipped to deal with it. And then when your mom picks up the phone and calls the police, guess what? The police are only authorized to deal with 3 or 4 different things. So when they get there, all they can do is take that child. See, they may not be some criminal, but it might be a situation that it's just not safe and they need to be out of there. But all the police can do is take that child to jail. Now this child has a criminal record. An arrest record. And so I don't know why these things aren't apparent, that the systems would make adjustments and kind of like work, get in sync with each other. Because they could do it very easily. Right?
Yeah.
If Social Security, if they can tell when you're working and how much you've been working and your whole life long, and if they can verify your income and food stamps and all that, then they can other systems can do that too. So I'm just saying.
I was trying to cue up something on Eileen Warnos, but.
And I think that the foster care system in the United States, I think it just feeds into trafficking and pedophilia, and I think the whole thing should be outlawed and abolished. And I say that from my own personal observation. I used to we had a contract. To clean commercial buildings, and one of the buildings that we cleaned was Department of Family and Children's Services.
Okay.
And since we were in there, we cleaned the building overnight. Well, the teenagers that were in foster care, but they didn't have a bed for them or a home or a place for them, they would bring them back into the offices where they let CPS children have supervised visitation, and they would let them sleep on the couch in there or on the floor, buy them pizza or like that. And then they would move them in and out of there like they were incarcerated. Like they had done something wrong. Like they were like in actual custody, and then no place to shower, nothing like that. And then they would have to get up and go to school the next morning, blah blah blah, and then they do that thing the whole day, and nobody knows that this stuff is going on. It's ridiculous.
Well, like you said,
right here in Everett, Washington, okay, and that was 20, 30 years ago when that was happening.
Eileen
Wuornos and the homeless, what do? They take to the woods too. People are camping, and you see them on the tent cities, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not even bothering to go find no wood.
It's interesting. I've just tried to upload a couple of videos on so I can get the audio for Eileen Wuornos, and it will not allow me to do it. So I'm not going
to
press my luck.
It won't allow you to upload it?
Yeah, so it's got corrupt files or whatever. So I'm going to leave that alone.
Interesting.
But like I said, when you're helping the homeless, you because like I said, what we're talking about
it's dangerous. It's risky,
yeah,
and dangerous.
If you don't know how to deal with that market.
I'd rather
deal with people that, you know.
So you have to have
the only way I can see you working
way.
With the homeless is
so that's why,
you got to partner with
why,
somebody that knows how to deal with that.
This is why I say you deal with programs and community
right.
centers or places, program directors, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because they will provide any case management that anybody needs, and they'll also be able to tell you the ones that can pretty much, you know, stand on their own, and they don't need much case management. And they'd be a successful person. So you
right.
need to develop relationships with, I told you this before, with program directors and community centers and things like that, the shelters and whatever, and that'll give you your people, and you won't have to be responsible for vetting them, or anything, caring for them, providing case management.
Mm.
And
right.
if they become a problem, you could just bounce them right on back there,
right.
and they're set up so no nobody would be worse for wear.
Right, all right, Rob.
Because
we're gonna take a quick break and then go to some more calls here. So hold on for a moment.
Down.
Okay, the board's back up. Hopefully that did it. 619-768-2945. Press 1 if you want to join in on the conversation. Let's go to the next caller. 314, your mic is open.
L.A., how are you and Robin doing today?
Well, sounds like we're okay.
I'm doing fine. L.A., you should have went on down that street and kicked butt, man. Clean up that mess.
And what street you talking about?
When the homeless people was getting ready to attack you.
That night I just... Because at first I thought, you know...
You almost got God.
You should have went down there and worked some Bruce Lee on.
Whoa.
I wish you stopped playing with the butt. Rob, what you been up to?
Oh, man, I'm always working, you know.
Any more good recommend Amtrak trips?
I got booted off. Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
I'll be taking an Amtrak trip over the Thanksgiving holidays. I'll be going from Seattle to Portland, or a little bit further south of Portland, Oregon.
I thought you'd take you back to New York, come back around again.
Well, I haven't had occasion to go to New York just yet.
And we could write a series on it called Robin and the Big Apple.
Where'd you go? You did a long train trip last year, Robin. Where'd you go, North Carolina or where?
I went to Atlanta.
Okay.
I went to Atlanta, and I've also went to Los Angeles on the train. I was twice on the train for some reason.
Well, you made that. I know that long trip you did across the country. That was to Atlanta.
I've been across country a few times now.
How long did it take? Well, that's a 4-day trip.
Five. Four and a half to 5 days.
Okay.
It was 5 days.
Was the food good?
I only purchased one meal the whole time. The rest, I took myself a little collapsible teapot, and I could plug it into the outlet and steam some water, and I packed some cup of soup and a cup of noodles in my bag, and I had my own water, my own juices and stuff, and I didn't spend no money except for one meal aboard the train, and that was $25 for lunch. And I was like,
Amtrak, you can carry your own food. I mean, they sell food, but you can carry your own food as well.
So, you know, I figured out a way, you know, 5 days, how I'm going to keep it fresh and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, man, a little teapot. And when I get done with it, I just wipe it out and it collapses so that it's only like 2.5-3 inches. And I just put it away, pack it in a big bag. I had a whole little, like a little overnight bag.
Oh, yeah.
Filled with my beverages, my food. Yeah, and everybody on the train just looked at me. They go, man, shit, that is really smart, huh?
When you got off the train at the end of the trip, did they tell you to hurry back?
Who, Amtrak?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You're back now.
Amtrak doesn't care because they get they got their money for their tickets, so they don't care if you buy food on their thing. And if you go to their little cafes and snack shops, a little bag of potato chips is like $3. A sandwich is like $10. And I'm like, I'm not doing it.
Amtrak ain't cheap.
I researched all that.
Anything the government run, they mess it up, boy, I tell you.
Yeah, that's true.
What's the backstory, Pianki, if you know? Why did the federal government take over Amtrak?
Cars, man, cars.
Hmm.
People buying cars.
Amtrak still has a healthy number of people that take it. I used to take it once or twice a month myself when I was dealing with that house jacker.
I ain't been on any train, and I love trains too, by the way.
Yeah, Amtrak's comfortable.
I have a mystification for freight trains in particular. But I haven't been on one in decades, literally decades. So,
well,
LA,
what's
your topic today, man?
We started out with what's your family business?
Oh, yeah.
That's
my daughter had an advertisement business.
Mm-hmm.
And
what type of advertising? All media or radio, TV, periodicals, what?
Digital.
Oh, okay.
Advertising.
All right, online, all right.
She would put up, we would offer to advertise businesses products and any other type of advertisement. Political advertisement, food advertisement, clothing, any type of advertisement. We would set flat screens in different businesses. We would rent the service out for $25 a month. And the only difference would be the location. Any business anywhere in the country to have their ad displayed on their screen for that price.
Okay.
And we used to have different channels that would carry like 40 ads for $25 a month. That would be $100,000 a month income on one.
Oh, that's nice.
You can have one in Florida. You have one up in Washington State, California, New York, and they would be connected on the internet.
Hmm. Now, does she still have it?
No.
Okay.
You could even light up a billboard. Of course, that's about the same amount, $25 or $40 a month, and your ad would show at least 6 times per hour if you was full up with 40, 15
right.
seconds each.
Now, you're a builder. Any family members follow you into that profession?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, so those ads was pretty nice at the time. But, you could even have them put them in cabs. Or put them at the grocery store checkout line. Of course, then you would be having to, you can make a deal with the store to advertise their products there for sale in other locations,
for having access to putting screens at their checkouts. So that was a pretty good deal. Good idea anyway.
Well, yeah, point of sale purchases. I know that when I go through Walmart, they got plenty of stuff at the point of sale.
Mm-hmm.
From anything from a bag of Doritos to Reese cups to sodas to magazines.
What do you think about them folding homes?
Love them. Matter of fact, I spoke to one of your contacts, Minor, 11X, yesterday morning.
Yeah.
Get a line on some trade shows in that area. So he was giving me, what kind of keywords to put in. So I followed his instruction, and I started to find some manufacturers and trade shows where I can buy the parts, the component parts. So he was very helpful in that. Matter of fact, I was going to call him back this morning because I figured the best time to catch him is like,
I don't know.
8 o'clock your time, 8:30 your time. But
I don't know if
those
things are too active during this pandemic, are they?
You know, I don't know. I sent emails to a couple of them so far, and then this afternoon I'm gonna get back. Matter of fact, since I got New Orleans straight for now, I can dedicate more. Cause I spent about an hour and a half on it yesterday. But from his guidance, I was able to get to, you know, run into the right videos and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Web searches on Google. Anyway, I'll probably call. I'm gonna probably call him back today. But the best time to catch him, from my experience, is catch him in the early in the morning, like 8:30.
Yeah, but those, you know, getting back to those ad screens, those things was. You still don't see much of that. People taking advantage. I guess they don't know. But
for
new businesses, and you know what really made money was the political season, because some politicians, they wanted to get their face out in front of as many
people
as you possibly can.
At least some of the people I know that majored in business and marketing, I got a friend of mine, we used to talk about marketing all the time in college. But for some reason, he's never advertised anything. Which is, now me, I'm a believer in paid advertising. Because I know when I started to try to promote myself, I did the flyer route. And I was, you know, put these flyers out, and then I showed up for the event, and the only person there was me. So then I said, you know what, I'm going to start paying for advertising. And, you know, social media is a little bit different, but even with social media, you got to put yourself out there. And they have paid advertising with social media as well. So
now I've seen some vehicles going down the road on the side of trucks, trailers.
Mm-hmm.
They had a screen that was flashing people's ads on both sides and the back of it.
All right, that's interesting. I remember I don't take the city bus that often, but city buses typically have ads, you know, plastered on the inside.
Yeah, they just paper.
Yeah. That's not digital.
Electronic screen where it changes.
Right.
From proprietor to proprietor. You can even do automobile manufacturers. Like around the convention center, but convention center is hard to. They usually do that themselves. But hell, after the advent of George Floyd, they're talking about suing black folks. You might be able to do that. A black business.
I never thought about that. You're right, because George Floyd got a lot of traction. His stories. And they, you know, any word on what's happening with the other three police officers? I haven't. their case has been quiet since they convicted Chauvin. I haven't heard.
They tried. I think Chauvin. I think his case is gonna be overthrown because too much advertising and that shit that were backseat order was doing. You know, that's another thing. You could flash for the FBI wanted in your nightclubs, convention centers. There was a one there in St. Louis on Hallsford called Spruels. I think he calls it Spruels. I know he had one down on Jefferson called Spruels. A lot of people come in and out of there for funerals and all sorts of things. And hell, you put one of them, we had a screen up in there. You flash wanted posters. Somebody walk by, see themselves. Damn, I want it.
That can happen. I just saw something yesterday. Some guy in Miami, this is years ago, won a speedboat contest somewhere in Miami. And they flashed it on ESPN, and he did an interview. And he was wanted by somebody in California, some law enforcement agency in California. So,
did they get him?
I imagine they did. I mean, just pick up a phone. He had a warrant out for, I don't know how the interstate, you know, whatever the packs they might have on that. But I'm sure, I mean, well, it's on a federal level. That's an automatic no-brainer. But he was wanted on a California state warrant. So I don't know if they're allowed to cross, allowed to travel across the United States. I imagine they are.
Well, bounty hunters can go anywhere.
They're bounty hunters as well. Yeah, but this guy, he was on ESPN giving an interview. And I guess the detective, whoever was in his caseload or file or whatever you call it, got on top of it.
Bounty hunters work for the courts. And the court put a warrant out for you. You got to obey the court.
Yep, bench warrant. You got to go in.
Bounty hunters got more leeway than police. If police has got you in handcuffs, bounty hunter can come up and take you over. Police got to let you go.
I did not know that.
U.S.
Marshal is not even getting that position.
Yeah, U.S. Marshal the same way. I guess if you were between a U.S. Marshal and a bounty hunter, I guess they just take a sword and cut you in half. But anyway, that's about all I had to contribute today.
Okay, thank you for that. I'm trying to look at my board here because it's refreshing. Robin, any Hilltop tonight?
Yes, we've got the Traffic Jam radio show tonight on the Hilltop Radio Show at 9 to 11 Eastern Standard Time. And you can call in at 516-453-9110. And then tomorrow night as well, I'll be on with the Vibe 5 exclusive at the same place.
And
the Hilltop Radio Show on Blog Talk. Did she come back?
Yeah, I think she's back. Peggy, press 1 if you have any announcements to make. And then what's tomorrow? What's tomorrow, Thursday? No, tomorrow's Friday.
Yeah.
We're going to do a test drive on Patreon Saturday. What time did we say, Robin? Oh, 10:30 a.m.
Yes, 10:30 we do the show.
We're going to do a test run on Patreon Saturday morning 10:30 Eastern Standard Time, 9:30 Central, and or just for your local time zone, wherever that might be. So that we'll be doing a test run for Patreon. 15-30 minutes, that's about it on that platform. So, all right, so tonight Hilltop, oh, how did his, he was in the emergency, well, not emergency room, he was on his way to the hospital, what, a couple of days ago?
He had a stroke a couple of months ago, you know, and he's got some weak spots, and so he fell the other day, so he's fine, no broken bones, no, it wasn't a stroke, he just had a mild concussion from the fall.
Okay, so he's back home.
He's
now.
Home. Yeah.
All right, well, that's good. Yeah, well, the stroke didn't affect his speech, obviously, because he sounded normal to me.
Yeah, it did at first.
Speaking of which, somebody that used to be here on the regular, it's too late because he likes to be called in the morning. Peter Simpson, he had a stroke maybe a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, two, three, somewhere around there. So the best time, I talked to him about maybe once or twice a year since he had that stroke, but he sounds normal, but he goes to bed early, and it's best to catch him in the morning. So I'm not going to take a chance of calling him now, but I'm going to see if I can get him on the show one day. Whatnot. But, yeah, strokes, I know a friend of mine, she had a stroke. She was a chain smoker. And she kept on smoking after she ignored the stroke. I mean, her speech was intact, but her physical mobility was affected. But she kept on smoking and... then had a lung infection that wouldn't give up on her for a bit. She ignored that, kept on smoking, and then she was on a decline and then got diagnosed with lung cancer, passed away last October. So, got to listen to your body. On that note, we'll be back tomorrow. Everyone have a good rest of the day.